welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Alongside me here, I have Robbie Britton. How are you doing, Robbie?
I'm all right. Alongside you, we're not sat next to each other, are we? Are you in the next room?
That's technically a lie. Sorry. Alongside, imagine it visually, we're sitting next to each other, but we're not. We're in different continents, different countries we're in, but hey.
Didn't feel like we could start on a lie. That's just so misleading.
How is Italy? You're in lockdown.
We are officially not in lockdown. It's all right. Like, we went to the supermarket yesterday and thought there'd be like widespread panic, everyone like stealing all the chickpeas. Just a normal day.
Yeah.
We saw one person with like a scarf over their face. And I just think they were playing dress up. And one guy like taking six trolley loads of super tenants. And that, I don't think that was a coronavirus panic. That was just a Jesus is a good offer on super tenants. I better get like he had a truck and everything. He was just loading them up constantly. How's Holland?
Holland is not. Oh, it's beautifully sunny today. Actually, we've had wind for about a month now, which has been a pain in the neck. I'd run a 10K this weekend. It was called the Polder Loop, which I think a polder is like a dike, so it's like quite an exposed area to run. So it's 10K. In a massive, I think it's 40, 45 kilometre an hour winds, but it felt much more than that. And it was just so difficult because it was completely and utterly exposed. You're running on the top of this like path, which was just, there's no hills or buildings or things for miles. And yeah, it was a really, really hard run. There was times when you were being blown across the side of the path. You couldn't really get much of a clear run at it. So yeah, it was hard work. I did win though, which was nice. I was expecting around 32 minutes just because I knew it was going to be on my own and I knew it was going to be windy. But yeah, it was a whole minute slower than that, which is one of my slowest 10Ks I don't think I've done 10K for a while, but it was, I did get the win, which is, I'm pleased about.
I mean, what do you want? Like a tiny violin that you only run 33 minutes? I mean, as well, remember the rules as well. If you write about this on Strava or social media, you've got to double the wind strength. Just that's it for any runners out there. If you are writing about a windy run, make sure you double the amount of wind and ensure people know it was a headwind the whole way. Even if it's a circular route, headwind the whole way.
It wasn't the best race I've ever had, but it was fun. I won some tulips.
Oh, nice.
Very Dutch.
Yeah.
And I gave them to my wife. She enjoyed those. And some bulbs. I think they might be tulip bulbs, but I don't know. I think my wife can decipher that more than I can. But yeah, so it was all right. It was a very Dutch experience. What about you? What have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
I've been injured, mate. There's you worrying a 33-minute 10K and I haven't been able to run pain-free in about 6 months.
Jesus. How are you feeling the time?
I did some cycling.
Yeah.
I have started the IOC diploma in sports nutrition. That's filling up some of my time. And I am going out and crewing people to do their own running in Finland at 24-hour races.
Oh, wow.
So that fills the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it's not like I'm just lost for something to do. Cycling takes up a lot more time as well because you spend a lot of time just fixing flat tyres and adjusting seats and all that like boring stuff.
There ain't no faff like a bike faff, is there? You can't beat it.
It makes me just miss those days where you put on a pair of trainers and just go out for however long you want.
Yeah. So what was this 24-hour race like? Was it quite a prestigious one?
The Finnish national record was broken, and an Estonian women's record, and the Irish men's record. So, I mean, it was good. It's been going for about, I think, 7 or 8 years now, maybe even longer. It's an indoor one, which is pretty cool.
Oh, God.
It's a really cool facility.
Yeah.
Like, it was a 390-metre in lane one, the track.
Yeah.
It was reasonably hard, but it was, like, upstairs in this sports centre. So down below, you had loads of different, Well, they were like roller hockey rinks. They were just all like playing roller hockey. But for anyone British listening, five-a-side football courts.
Yeah.
And then the track was like on a level above. And we were just in there for 24 hours. And our runners were just like charging around in a controlled manner whilst we fed them.
24 hours of just going around a 391-metre track. Oh, God, that must have been tough work. Wow, I couldn't imagine it.
I did a little run in there.
Yeah.
And you know what? Because you can't see the other side, it was quite easy to switch off. I found, I only did half an hour, so maybe it was harder for 24 hours. But I have had experience of open tracks and 24-hour track races. And this one I felt was all right because you couldn't focus on the length of the lap. You just had to go around the next bend and you couldn't see anything. And there was like a view out of one window. Then there was a gym that was in like the kind of where your high jump and your hammer throw cage might be. That was like a big old gym.
Yeah.
And then you went past a load of people playing different sports. And then you went past a shop and another window. And then you were back. It was quite, like, I found it all right to switch off.
Yeah. So how many laps did the winner go around in then? How many times did they go around this track in 24 hours?
How many laps? Well, can you divide 254 kilometres by 390? Because it's a lot.
That's it. Yeah.
I think
wow.
If it was 400s, that would be 600 is 240. So another 14 on top. Oh, blimey.
There's someone better at maths listening than us, 40. I'm sure.
There is, yeah. We need we need Rain Man. And my runner he finished third. Yeah. Mr. Rye Webb, and he did 232 kilometres, which was a PB by 16 kilometres, which would be, what, a lot of laps.
10 miles.
Wow. Yeah, so he had a really good day. He did a bit of complaining.
Yeah.
In the middle.
Yeah.
He'd come in one lap and said, I can't do this anymore. And we went, just do one more lap and then we'll discuss it. And the next lap, he was a bit less whiny.
Yeah,
so he kept going.
Yeah. Well, actually, it'd be good. It'd be good to bring up, well, we'll talk about it a bit later, but the theme for our show this week, which is recovery. Because how could you recover?
Yeah.
How do you recover from something like that? How is he feeling now, your athlete, after running 24 hours of
running? Right. He's been out for a run this week. He's been out slower. I spoke to him yesterday, day before. So this weekend he went out for a couple of slower runs with a group. And he said as soon as he tried to go into the next gear, his legs just went, no, mate. So, like, from experience, you've just got a lot of damage in your legs and your body overall. Everything's a bit tired. And if you could go out, like, just often I'll try a swim or really, really easy cycle just to get the blood flowing around the legs for recovery. And then if you ask anything more of your muscles than a very slow effort or very easy effort, it almost feels like they're craving oxygen. They're like, whoa. This is that I need more oxygen you could provide, mate. Yeah. So slow down.
Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the focus in a little while because we have to start off with the monthly news roundup. So I've made some notes on this because there's been quite a lot of stuff happened. But the main theme is it's been windy and there's been the coronavirus. And that's probably best sums up the month of February. So Paris Half was cancelled. What else was Tokyo was half cancelled. They had still the elite race went on.
Elites only.
I missed the race. In Squirrel, they cancelled that, which is a shame, which is really, you know, that was the most important one of the month that was missed. It would have been the Netherlands Championships for 10K, but yeah, they cancelled.
Well, they cancelled a cross-country here in Italy, near Milan.
Yeah.
And it was that was the precursor. I guess it was maybe a Southerns, because it was, I'm in a little team and they had to do this one to qualify for the Nationals. Yeah. Like, it was this weekend. They cancelled it. They postponed it. To the week after, and now that it's back on this weekend anyway, so it's back to normal.
There was some stuff that did happen that had no wind involved, and it was the European over in Boston as a race, and Mark Scott broke the European indoor 5,000 meter record, 13:08 he ran in Boston. Came second in the race. That's beating Mo Farah's record. It's beating basically every other English athlete that's ever been born. So he beat and the European record as well, so that's pretty impressive. He goes under the radar, doesn't he, Mark? Yeah, he goes under the... You don't really think of him. He goes under the radar a bit. Do you know what I mean? Here in Britain, you don't really think of him as the, you know, one of the top... kind of. If I had to name the top five British runners over 5-10K, I wouldn't necessarily give Mark Scott name first. But he's a strong competitor. He's always in the GB kind of cross-country teams and stuff. I guess that's mainly because he's based out in the US that you don't really notice him so much. But yeah, pretty decent...
Like he jumped back on the scene a lot bigger the last couple of years, didn't he? Because he ran the fastest 5K road. Was it last year or year before, maybe? He was the fastest over 5K that we had.
Yeah.
In that calendar year. But, I mean, it almost feels like he's developed over in the US.
Yeah.
Is he Bowman Track Club? And then now he's quite a distinct-looking runner as well. When he's running, you can see him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
He looks like he's... got a set of shoulders on him, the lad.
Yeah.
So maybe he was just busy lifting stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's get behind him. For all those slightly more slightly bigger athletes out there, guys that just go out and get on with it, Mark Scott is our new icon for the 2020s. Anyway,
he's cracking running. That was a really good runner.
13:08, amazing. There also some other stuff that had wind, which is the US Marathon Trials. Did you watch this or hear about it?
I did watch it. Yeah. Well, I mean, I tried to. The NBC coverage was interesting. They chose their ad breaks at random times.
Okay. But it was massive. Like 700 runners, I think. 440 female runners. So slightly less on the male side, I think. And it was brilliant. Like, I'd love to see the UK doing something similar.
Someone said that the British wouldn't be able to get as excited about the Americans about it. It ended up just being like six geezers in shorts and vests running on in a muddy loop or something. We wouldn't be like, I suppose it's, I mean, it's a much bigger endurance market, not market, but like the depth is bigger in the US because of the collegiate system. You can have those hundreds of people. And in 245 and 219, I guess we would have a decent amount, but we wouldn't have the numbers they had. And then it would be, I can imagine it being a little bit different if we did it in the UK. Maybe for the women's. We're getting more and more women under 245. But again, it's...
Yeah. But I mean, they could extend it slightly, you know, 230 runners and below, and see how they sort of get those guys in there. It's just when you watch the London Marathon, and as a keen follower of the sport in Britain, as soon as a couple of guys go over the line, you might see one British athlete, if you're lucky, cross the line on the BBC. It just then goes to, you know, the Eiffel Tower and that sort of thing. And to actually have coverage following a race, do you know what I mean? Someone dressed as the Eiffel Tower, or a guy carrying a fridge, you know.
Okay, I thought you meant it went over to France.
Yeah, forget London; it's disgusting. Yeah, let's go over to Paris. But yeah, do you know what I mean? It just there's no interest other than in if Kipchoge breaks the record, and then it's about everyone else's day, the charity runners and stuff, which is fine. But it's just it doesn't make for.
I guess it's hard to cover like without having like 15 different cameras, because the men's like the I'd love to see more of the club runners coming through at any event, like even at like the US Olympic trials, when Rupp and co and like Jake Riley, that was a great run by him, it's really nice to see when they crossed the line, it then went like and just like looked at them for a while. I was like, but the women's race was at like mile 20-21, the decisive break was happening, we're watching Galen Rupp stand around write down his medication list for the guys afterwards. And like, what are we doing this? Yeah. Like, I want to see these women actually having a race. Yeah. And then you come back and there was Tuliamuk and what was the other lady's name? Molly Seidel. And they're gone. Yeah. And you're like, well, how did that happen? Where's everyone else gone? Yeah. So I guess it's the coverage at half the time. If with the British who are in London, like once... I mean, the top Brit, if Mo's racing, or like Callum or Dowie, whoever's gone, once they've gone, it splits up pretty quickly. So you'd need about 15 cameras just kind of focusing on. But I suppose we've got the technology to do that now. Just stick GoPros on a lot of them. On the back of everyone's head, so then they can see the runner behind them.
Perfect. We got it. We've solved British sport. We can get more interest in British runners by just GoPro in the London Marathon, everyone having a GoPro on the back of their head.
Well, they did it in the Tour de France. They put GoPros on some of the bikes in the tour.
Of course.
Provided a different... Yeah. And then they put Bradley Wiggins on a moped and got him pissed. We could do that.
Except who can we have instead of Bradley Wiggins? We've got to have someone who's quite... Maybe Steve Jones. He's not much of a talker, though, is he? But I'm sure he likes a bit. Dave Bedford.
Who would you put on the back of a moped?
Dave Bedford, definitely. He likes a chat.
Yeah, he'd definitely have the lager.
Yeah, he'd have
a
lager. Perfect. There we go. We solved it. The British sport's going to get...
But just buzzing around on him. I'd watch that. That'd be brilliant.
But it was a shame to see Rupp win, wasn't it? It's always a shame to see him win. But Jacob Riley was nice.
Did you see him going around the bends?
No.
So there were quite a few kind of hairpin turns on the course around cones, and everyone, it was like he was on ice. He was just like, can't go around the bends. And I didn't know if that was because of his new fancy like freak shoes, or if he was just had these limbs that could only go in straight lines for long times, and if you went around too tight a bend, they would just snap.
Crazy. And but third place, that was pretty impressive. 43-year-old man, Abdi Rahman. He managed to take
Abdi
it.
Abdi Rahman,
amazing.
Yeah.
43 to run 20. Was he? Did he run 210? 210 something to qualify.
210, yeah. So that, I mean, that was I get a bit bored. Yeah. Like 43. This is like his fifth time qualifying. He just looks ridiculous, doesn't it?
Because he's Somali, right? I think he's part of that Mo's kind of group.
Is he Somali?
Yeah,
boy?
I think him and I know that he trains with Mo, that guy Bashir, who did really well at Tokyo.
Oh, and Bashir Abdi as well.
And the other guy is another guy from the Netherlands called Mohammed. It might be called Mohammed. Mohammed. No, I don't think he is. But they all train out together out in Ethiopia. So they're all Somali heritage. These fellas that train together. It's called something.
It's nice that they've got a group like and they're celebrating their heritage together.
Yeah,
good. You end up running with people you can relate to, don't you, I suppose?
Anyway, do you see that thing about Jacob Riley, about the shoe thing?
No.
So he's coached by Lee Troop from Australia.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of come back into fitness. I think he'd run 2:13 maybe before, but he ran, was it Chicago or Boston? I'm not sure. He came back 10th in about 2:70, maybe quicker than that, wearing the Vaporflies. So okay. he got a few offers to for shoe contracts for coming up for this race, but he didn't take them because he thought, all right, I'll just give it. Like, I want to see if I can qualify, and I love wearing these Vaporflies, so I might as well try. And obviously Nike tried to they had this campaign where they offered every single runner who's running the trials the chance to wear the Alpha Flies. So if you wanted it or not, you could do. Yeah, perfect bit of marketing there from Nike, as usual. And he decided he tried them once on the Friday, and he felt, Jesus, these are good. They're even better than the Vaporflies. I'm going to wear them. So he wore, for his first like hard session that he'd done, he wore these new Alpha Flies, and it paid off. Not very often that kind of thing happens. And also his tactics paid off by sitting back and just trying to come through and hammer towards...
Yeah, he was sixth, wasn't he? With a bit to go. He'd done really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll just say, like, it was like the first three of the men were all wearing with the Alpha Fly, but the women's was Hoka, like Tulia Mux in the Hokas, Seidel, you said it was in Saucony, and I guess third, Sally Kipyego was in the Alpha Flies. And then you had Desi Linden in Brooks just behind it. So, like, the women's was much more, wasn't the shoe dominated. It was quite nice to see. Because, like, we are getting, I know, like, the shoes make a difference, right? We can't hide from that. But they're not everything. And that was just a nice little reminder. I mean, again, like, Rupp probably would have won if he was wearing a pair of, like, yeah, clogs. Yeah. He was a class above. And he showed that by just jogging the first half and then tempoing the last bit solo. So it's nice to kind of just every now and again look at that women's race and say it's not just about those shoes. You can't just put magic shoes on and win, but it will make a difference, as we're seeing. And like, we had the big half, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, women's winner, Lily Partridge, she wasn't wearing anything special. She was just wearing Adidas, unless she was wearing the new Adidas, but we don't really know.
I think
about
she was in the new Adidas. I'm not sure, though, so don't quote me on that. But it did look like, because they've got is it the Adidas Pro coming out?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and they're not developed by NASA or something, they claim, and that kind of thing. But
developed by NASA? I mean, like, they make spaceships. Why would you want them making shoes? What a ridiculous claim. Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's actually UN.
They're good at solving peace issues and stuff, so maybe they'll be good at putting carbon fiber in shoe soles.
NASA? Yeah. Why have NASA got involved? That's just like, what a load of bollocks.
But that was the controversy, wasn't it? The men's winner. Did you see that? Oh, the men's second place, right? The men's British
winner.
Men's
second place. Yeah.
Chris Thompson. So he, amazing run for me. I was watching it on Twitter on the...
on the live.
I was watching on the live stream. And he ran so well. He's like really giving Bekele a big... something to
think
about.
He went for it, didn't he? Which is always nice to see.
Incredible. But he... In the photos that have since come back, obviously he's an on-athlete, but... We can't confirm or deny, but it looked like he'd painted his shoes in black. Did you see this? And he was wearing the Vaporfly.
Basically, it looked like afterwards he said, and I think it's come out more clearly afterwards in discussions, that On have given him and Andy Vernon the okay to wear a pair of blacked out Vaporflies until the On shoe, which they're, and Thompson said in one of these comments that he's working closely with On to develop their performance shoe, but because they're behind at the moment, they've given him the okay so that he doesn't lose out on like a world half place. Because if it's making 2 or 3 minutes difference, I mean, he got within seconds of an 8-year-old PB, and it's great to see.
Yeah.
But like, if it was like a closer race, then he's losing out on a world half place, and that's no good for them either. It's a difficult ground, isn't it? Because as a brand, it's good to see a brand making that kind of acknowledgement so that their athletes aren't put out. But it slightly feels that we should be clearer on these things, because then there's a bunch of people thinking, well, Andy's running in the odds. Chris is running the odds, and he's had a blinder, so maybe I can wear these as well. Most of us, and the Twitter police were obviously very heavy on this, and we're like, oh, hold on a second. And you had the likes of a couple of people like Joe Gray this morning saying, if I'm sponsored by he's a US mountain runner, if I'm sponsored by a brand, I'm wearing that brand to the end kind of thing. And yes, I get that. If you're signing a contract, but if you sign a contract before this whole shoe controversy, and then that's happened, and it's going to cost you your last chance to run at the World Half and stuff, or the last few GB vests, because these guys coming towards the latter stages of their career. I think he's 37, isn't he, Chris Thompson?
Definitely.
Not that I'm saying he's past it, because obviously he's still got it. He's giving it some beans with Bukele. But it is difficult to draw that line, isn't it? Because you don't want the athlete's disadvantaged. It's nice that brand's acknowledging that for the athlete, but are they then happy for someone to watch this and go, I'll bear it by a pair of runs. The geezer was second. And and then fall over if it's wet.
Shame. But it's going to be interesting. I think there's a guy over here. I think I mentioned this when I was talking to Elsie on last week's podcast, the week before. Michel Butter, who's the number one runner over here in the Netherlands, and he's the same age as Chris. His career's kind of slowly dwindling, but he's at New Balance, which I guess is a slightly bigger player than On, and he doesn't know what to do, really, because he feels like that shoe's going to make such a difference to him that he probably will be able to get the Tokyo qualifying time and run his last ever Olympics. But he's tied up with New Balance, has been for his whole career. What does he do? What did he do to change that, sir?
But there's people running big PBs in New Balance. They've got their own version. So they have published the New Balance have got one out, at least that their athletes are wearing. And you've got the likes of Steph Twell, Callum Hawkins, even Andy Davis running. I think he was in
And Johnny Miller.
Johnny Miller. They're all running well. So they're running equivalent stuff. So maybe, is he trying their shoe? I mean, I've got less sympathy for a New Balance athlete because they have got a version. I really can't see how On can create a shoe with that level of cushioning and a carbon plate with their cloud system. I can't see how it's going to work. It'd be interesting. With the New Balance, they have got something that's working, I think there's people out there that are probably putting too much weight on it, and then that's affecting them even more.
Yeah,
because they're like, well, I'm not in those shoes, so I can't do anything. And then that self-belief just completely drops. Whereas other people who are thinking these magic shoes are absolutely ridiculous, and they're like, it pushes their belief even further.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's because you get high responders and low responders, and why are some people responding more? It could be purely physiological. Could be part psychological as well. I had a guy run a 67:30 something for a big half, and his PB was 72. No. I'm not saying. Yeah, I mean he's been doing a lot of hard work, a lot of consistent trainings. He's really improved. And part of that, he just said, I just didn't feel like I was going to slow down.
Really? Wow.
Just felt like I was working hard, and then just sat there. So I reckon he's probably in 68, 69 shape, definitely, because he's a good runner. He's a sub 230 marathoner, and he's training for London, and he's suddenly gone, whoa, hold on a sec. He went through 10K night on 10K.
Wow.
And was like, just felt great. And the training's going well, but as a coach, the coach at the moment, you'd be like, yeah, I'm doing a great job, all my athletes are PBing. what sessions are you giving them?
Paper flies.
I'm giving a session where they go down and sit down on the internet and buy these shoes. That's their session, it's all they've got to do. And then the next day, they're faster. Oh, wow, really? That's a great session, coach. It's kind of like not acknowledging that as a coach as well. It seems really weird. And then you want to get excited because you are helping these athletes because they're doing the sessions. But then you've got to kind of go, it's not all me, I'm afraid. I'd love it to be. I'd love for me to be some kind of endurance genius. Yeah, but, I mean, that aside, it is also a little bit down to
a little bit of magic sprinkles. But there was some good running there. So it was windy, but there was, I think, Samantha Harrison, who I didn't really know much about. She was the lead. This is the women's race. She was leading to mile 8, and she finished 71:01. Whoa. And then Steph Davis, who we talked about before, but she had a couple of... There's an article about her on Fast Running at the moment, isn't there, about Steph and her ambitions for...
Yeah, we had an interview on her recently.
Yeah, so those guys have qualified for the World Half, if it happens, I guess, with Corona. And for the men, Jake Smith, Devonian, Jake Smith, local boy to me, he was... I'm from Dorset, Devon way. I'm on the border down there. Jake is also from that area. And I remember, because I've been away for a long time, but there's a local park run, Seaton Parkrun. And I had the record there, I think, a while back, a few years ago. And this little young upstart came and took my record. And I thought, it must just be had a good day. He was got lucky and that sort of thing. And so I thought, I'll go back and I'll get that record back. And then he then took the record from being like 15:30, which I'd run on this course, to being like 14:40. And now he is breaking the British under 23 record by running 62 minutes at the big half and finishing second in the GB Championships. So, yeah, Jake, it's frustrating because I like to be the hero for the Dorset-Devon border. And unfortunately, you've taken that away from me. So anyway, good lad.
You really do love those kind of small victories.
I do. Yeah, I've got not much...
You're
not
winning much. Tulips over in Holland. Like, you're big time. Don't get caught up on everyone else's
race.
Don't
worry about British under 23
records.
You've
got lots of things going for you.
Thanks.
How would he be in the wind in Holland?
I think he'd probably be beating me.
Probably get blown in the air.
Yeah.
He might have done that. Yeah.
And Ross Millington, he had 62-33.
Multiple coloured vapor flies.
Yeah, what was that?
He had one on each foot.
Yeah,
I saw.
Yeah.
That's just because he's one of the cool kids, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah,
I hope he's getting them for free. That's like 400 quid of a shield.
Yeah,
isn't
Jesus.
It?
Jesus. Yeah. He's prolonging the life. He swaps them over, you see, and he prolongs the life of the shoe for a bit.
Maybe that's sustainability, because I got a pair of them that I've worn them like twice to DNF at the 24-hour race, and I'm wearing them down because I'm a horrible heel striker. I'm like wearing the back off because they're like, I just don't know how I'm doing it. We haven't even spoken about recovery yet.
What? Recovery. Oh, no, we haven't.
We spoke about recovery.
All I was going to say is Tokyo Marathon happened. That's the other news for the last
month.
And eight men under 208, incredibly fast. Even though if you see the photos of it, amazing. There's nobody watching. Nobody running, really. There's about a couple of hundred people doing it in total. And Bernou Legesi was first, 204.15. Second, Bashir Ahmed, one of Mo's group that we mentioned. And Sisu Lema was third. And I've had dinner with him before. I thought I'd mention that. I had some injera. Yeah. And I had a cup of tea with him, which was nice. He was a nice guy. I've talked about this in the podcast before, very strange training regime. He said that he takes 6 months to train for a race.
Oh, is that what you were saying before?
Yeah,
wasn't it?
2 months off, 1 month easy, 1 month a bit harder, 2 months really hard, and he's ready. But yeah, he did 204 as well. And the women's, Sal Pater she's a Kenyan girl, but she's Israel, 2:17:45, so really quick. For her, Dibaba and Kabede, two Ethiopians, second and third. But she ran the European Cup at the Night of the 10Ks last year and got taken down by Steph 12.
Got caught by 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic,
yeah,
that one.
Amazing race. But we should keep...
I was shouting at the telly then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should also do the fastest park run a month. So we always have this every month. Obviously, it's something that happens every week on Fast Runner magazine.
Who was the fastest one?
Can you guess for the women? It was a world record for the women, I think. I'm pretty sure it was.
Oh, was it Charlotte Arter?
It was Charlotte Arter. She ran 15:46, I think. 49, rather. And for the men...
49, it was closer to 50. Was it Tom Marshall? Was he 14:40? Or was it someone quicker than that this month?
It was Tom Marshall, 14:36. So two Welshmen. Two Welsh. Welshmen? Welsh people? Welsh...
I believe he was in his there was a lovely picture of him we used. He was looked like he was flying.
Yeah, he was so far off the ground, absolutely leathering it. It was really a good photo. Yeah.
It's proper middle distance runner doing a 5K, isn't it?
So congrats to them for being the fastest park runners. So that was nice. But we should move on to the recovery section. So this is going to be what we're talking about this week. We've got two good interviews, hopefully. One's confirmed. I'm doing it this week. I've got Christy Ashwanden, who's written a book about... she's a scientist, but also a former elite athlete. She has looked at all the spurious... Well, I shouldn't start by saying spurious.
I think I'm halfway through this book.
Yeah, okay. So we're talking to her this week. Unfortunately, I was talking to her last night, but she had a snowstorm and the internet went down. So we're talking to her about all the different types of recovery methods out there. There's so many different things you can do, from compression tights to supplements and that sort of thing. So she's done the job for us and looked at all those things, and we're going to talk to her about her thoughts on recovery and these things. Yeah, pretty good one. And then I'm trying, I shouldn't announce the other one because I haven't quite confirmed it yet, but hopefully one of the best recoverers, and she's from your kind of sphere of running. So we'll announce exactly who that is when it's confirmed. But she talks about, she's going to talk into that.
My sphere of running.
She's American. But anyway.
Best recoverers. I mean, I think me and you have got different definitions. It'd be interesting. Yeah. I think I've got an idea, but like, I think we might have different descriptions.
Yeah, okay.
So I mean, yeah. Don't know where you're going on.
We'll
there.
Come back to that. Anyway, recovery for you.
Come back to what? It. Tell me afterwards.
What do you think? What is recovery for you? So I guess we should probably define it before we start having a focus on it. So we're talking about not only recovery from individual sessions and training, but also, I guess, from injury. How do you let your body recover from the stresses and strains of running, training, essentially? So that can involve a series of things.
I suppose, like for a lot of people now, when you say recovery, they think of all gadgets and gimmicks and marginal gains and all that rubbish.
Yeah.
But basically, for me, recovery is getting the basics right.
Yeah.
It's sleeping well.
Yeah.
And eating well, and kind of giving your body the fuel it needs to recover.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's what it is eating well, sleeping well, and not overdoing the training.
Yeah. Yeah.
The old idea that you don't overtrain, you under recover. I think there is some truth in that.
Yeah.
And so it's getting the basics right. Recovery is, and it like, as a coach personally, I can set the sessions, but it's up to each individual athlete to really, you know, you help them, you educate them, but the recovery isn't just the gap between those hard sessions. It's what they do in between that as well.
Yeah.
And for most of our listeners, they're not pro athletes. Recovery involves going out and doing a job half the time.
Yeah.
And taking that into account and recovering not just from your training, but from life stresses in general.
Yeah. But it's hard though. Like the modern day, if I've got a spare 5 minutes on the train, I'm thinking, all right, how do I, you know, write the next post for the podcast, or how do I I've got this and that needs doing for work, or I haven't ordered the, you know, stuff for dinner, or all that sort of thing. And there's always stuff to go on, and with our handy little mobile phones we can pretty much do anything on the moon, so on the move. So like it's hard, like I never relax really in a day. I never just completely switch off from everything else and just sit and do nothing. Like it's a skill we've lost the art of, is just doing nothing. So I was thinking about it when I was talking to Christy, and I was thinking, actually, Kenyan runners, East African runners, these guys, maybe the factor that is, you know, there's altitude, there's this and there's that, which makes them particularly top performers, and, you know, some people with who doubt their performances might think there's something else involved. But they... I shouldn't go any further on that, but I think what they kind of get right is the ability to just to run and then do nothing and then run again and run, they rest, they don't do anything. Like, and that's probably because maybe it's in Kenya in a 10, it's harder to do stuff. You can't really, you know, go down the shops and sit around and do, you know, you meet a friend. You haven't got when I was in Addis Ababa, but I only had internet for about half an hour a day. So you can't really spend the day sort of doing work and doing that. They're able to do it because they're able to live in the countries and the places there are without having to generate too much income. And there isn't as many distractions. So maybe that is what is their key skill. I don't know. That's what I was thinking.
I was reading a paper last week for this course I'm doing. And one of them, it was sedentary behaviour and adiposity in elite athletes. And it looked at like the kind of, basically, the fat layers around some people. And it compared the ones that had entirely sedentary behaviour alongside their training and ones that had kind of low energy physical activity. And I always come to mind, there's pictures of Kipchoge like mopping out the training camp when in his spare time, and that low energy activity. And it said that like for body adiposity, and there is a link to performance in that sense there, it's better to have the regardless of the training. They said that, like the athlete's training level wasn't what, like there was no kind of correlation between level of training and volume of training and adiposity. It was more linked to what they did in their spare time. And if there was a low energy physical activity as opposed to purely sedentary behaviour, you're more likely to have a lean as a butcher's dog athlete.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it's, yeah, interesting. Because I do a lot of sitting around.
Yeah.
But then sedentary behaviour can include, yeah, like sitting at a desk and just kind of that kind of behaviour. You're better off having a slightly low energy physical activity in your spare time. I think maybe for recovery, but also for me,
yeah.
I just sit around and eat.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's different altogether as well. Like I've been troubled in Kenya because in my spare time, I'd just be sitting around the kitchen drinking loads of sweet tea and
yeah.
ugali,
yeah.
and there'd be none left for everyone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a paper from 2014. Sedentary behaviour and adiposity in elite athletes by, I can't even pronounce the names because they're all Spanish. Oh, Portuguese.
That tallies a little bit with, if we look at recent British, male British runners, and I guess our greatest ever marathon runner who isn't called Mo, the Steve Jones, obviously he worked in the RAF. And so
yeah,
he was,
he's a mechanic, wasn't he, from a big part.
Yeah, so he was doing a reasonably physical job most of the day. And you look at Dowie Griffiths now, sort of one of our fastest runners of the last 10 years, he works on the farm. So he's chasing sheep around all day. He's out and about on his feet. He's doing a reasonably physical job as well. So maybe it isn't about Lionel.
Josh Naylor and all the fell runners.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure Julian Goethe, I think he's another guy. Great book by Julian Goethe, by the way, if you ever decide to The Art of Running Faster. But he, I think he won the national cross country over here in the UK. And he was, I think he might have been in the RAF or something like that.
Is he a goat herder?
Yeah.
That would be
Yeah. Unfortunately not, but hey, but Dowie is.
But I mean, maybe that's one of the secrets around, how it was good in the '80s. Like that's where, because people did do these physical jobs alongside their training. It wasn't. I mean, I listened to a Steve Jones podcast,
yeah.
and he was saying like I basically had the option to go pro. I think after or before the Chicago World Record the first time, and he said, "Well, why would I change that? It's working. It's working for me."
Yeah.
I don't want to change it to go full time because he's seen people do it and they just end up like just not having the results they want.
Yeah.
So yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Like I think there is something in there, like that low energy physical activity.
Yeah.
Is better than just completely sedentary.
Yeah. But sitting behind a computer.
I guess what you're saying as well before about the mind is it switching the mind off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it might be easier to do if you're like digging a ditch or something.
Yeah.
Than it is sat around on the train, just sitting there, just kind of panicking about everything, about life, about coronavirus, about
yeah.
stockpiling chickpeas, like all kinds of these like middle class woes.
Yeah.
And like, what are we doing? And the mind is, and the body's just not resting.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose it's the angle of which you're sitting as well, all that stuff. Yeah. I try and like lay down on the floor on the train, but it worries people.
Yeah, people are going to start thinking you're a bit, yeah, you're a carrier of these old corona if you're lying around in
yeah.
that position.
What's he doing? Is he dying? No, he's just some lunges.
So we're going to look into this. We'll chat more about it over the next few weeks. Obviously, we've got these couple of interviews, next couple of shows. But we wanted your interaction, the listener interaction, not yours particularly, Robbie. It's good to have yours, but it's good to have the listeners too. So we want to maybe have a little question which you can email in with, you can tweet us, various things. What's the weirdest thing you have done/consumed in the name of recovery? And we're going to make it into a competition. So you can enter by either tweeting us at Let's Get Running, tagging at Fast Running, or you can write an Apple Podcast review of this show or any of the shows in this particular series. Write a review with a rating. 5 stars are nice, but it depends what you want to give us. And give your weirdest tip in the review. So there's a couple of ways of entering.
Weirdest tip.
And let's make it into...
Your weirdest tip, Sean?
Oh.
Start the ball rolling. What have you
weirdest
done? I bet you've done something weird.
Thing.
You?
I'm trying to think of the weirdest thing is... I should have thought about this before coming on. I think I've overdosed on vitamin C tablets in an effort to get away from a cold. That was quite a weird thing to do.
Overdosed.
Yeah.
Well,
one of the things I have done is my friend's a doctor over in New Zealand, and he texted me and said, "Listen, this isn't recovery, but I'm just going to say it anyway." But he said they've done this study. And they're hiding it. I think he was just taking the piss, to be honest. And he said, if you take 150 grams of paracetamol before a race, you have an incredible boost in performance. So I started doing this, and all I used to get is like bad stomach aches and all that sort of thing. But I continuously did it for a whole season and it didn't help me one little bit. So that's kind of quite a weird thing to do, but I guess it's not recovery. So
150 milligrams of paracetamol.
Yeah, so you pop three paracetamols in your mouth just before, like, oh, within half 1. An hour.
5 grams.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
gotcha.
Biggins, yeah. Yeah, it didn't help a little bit. So I think he either got the study completely wrong. I don't know why it would help anyway. I'm not sure what the benefits are, but anyway.
Paracetamol? Well, like, I had this discussion with someone before. Because, so one, they use paracetamol to lower core body temperature. So if you're overheating in a race, that could have a slight effect on it there. Yeah. But also it blocks the periphery pain receptors. I can't remember. Caffeine blocks pain in one way and paracetamol in another. Yeah. But actually, I did a talk. It was like an open table thing at Kingston Uni.
Yeah.
And the pharmacologists there were like, paracetamol's not going to do anything. But I think, like, I've seen it within 24-hour races, people having a paracetamol, and it blocks that, a slight bit of that pain.
Right, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe that's going to be, and if you're running over 10K, then it, like, the pain is so large, it's not really going to make any difference, is it?
Well, I've got to tell you, it didn't work a bit.
It might lower your core temperature. So I think that's proven that it lowers core temperature. So if you're, and one of the reasons when we work too hard, our body core temperature goes through the roof, especially if it's a warmer race. So that might be it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite a lot as well, 1.5 grams paracetamol. That's more than the recommended dose. Yeah. You can trash your liver doing that.
To be in my study, which had a sample of one, it didn't work at all. So don't try it, everybody. What about you? What's the weirdest thing you've ever tried
for recovery?
Yeah.
Oh mate, what have I done? I've sat in some glacial streams.
Yeah.
Again, there's no scientific proof that works. I used to like get in and out.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that would make more of a difference. Because in my mind, you're constricting and then vasodilating the blood vessels, and it's just flushing the legs out.
Yeah.
Whereas my mate Mael, he would just sit in there for like 20 minutes, and I'm talking like proper painful.
Right. Okay.
Like I'd get out and I'm like, and he's just sat in there. This big Australian that's just kind of like, yeah man,
yeah.
Just sat there. I've tried that. We used to get in there.
Yeah.
I've got like a whole menagerie. Is that, I can't even use my menagerie for foam rollers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like a whole different range of foam rollers, which I don't really think work.
No.
Got some. I haven't tried recovery flip flops because I feel like that's a bit of a scam. They're just flip flops with the word recovery on the side of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So can't be having that.
Yeah.
Then what else? Well, yeah, there's loads of bits and bobs. Yeah. You just try anything, didn't you?
Yeah.
Eating different things.
Yeah.
Resting more.
I kind of thought about this L-carnitine thing about 2 years ago. I thought, oh yeah, everyone seems to be injecting this stuff. I'll just take, because you can take it as a supplement, right? Which is perfectly, but apparently you've got to take it for like 6 months to make any kind of difference. And I thought about that. I thought about that for 15 seconds, and then I thought, do you know what? I can barely remember to take, you know, to get myself up in the morning. So to remember to take a pill, a L-carnitine pill every month, forget it. So
well, apparently. The quantities you have to take, and you have to take it with carbohydrates. So any performance benefit in taken in an eaten form is outweighed by the amount of carbs you have to eat with it. That's why they were injecting it and forgetting to record the measurements. Because I believe, I'm not 100% certain of this, but I think one of the reasons you have to have this high concentration injected or via an IV, otherwise it doesn't really have the effect. Like the side effects of it counterbalance any benefits, so it's not really.
Oh well,
it's not really going to help.
Well, luckily I didn't bother with all that shit, so I stayed well clear. But I'm sure there's something in my mind I'm forgetting, which is totally crazy, and I'll reveal it probably in the next.
But, show. Again, you know, like the things we're doing, we go towards these ridiculous. Has either of us tried setting a 9 p.m. I mean, you might go to bed at 9 p.m. most nights anyway because you've got a look.
Yeah.
But like, even when you didn't have a look, and you know what I'm going to do to help my recovery? I'm going to eat these, I don't know, Botswanian chilies every day. No. Yeah. I'm going to go to bed at 9 p.m.
Yeah, no.
And get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
No, don't do that, do it. No. Fuck that. Change my sleep patterns. Yeah. No, I like staying up till 1 a.m. watching Netflix. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Crazy. Get to bed early. That's the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn your phone off. Turn your damn phone off. Stop listening to this.
No phone in the bedroom. Yeah. That's always a good one.
Yeah.
right? And then don't. And it's just, I do this. I can say this, and I still do it, and I wonder why I'm like been injured for 6 months. I don't think it's because I sleep badly, but like, yeah,
yeah.
Late nights, drinking. That's going to have a few beers. And
yeah.
Remember, like in the '80s, oh yeah, we had a few beers. But again, if you're struggling with recovery, it's just going to interrupt your sleep because your body's fighting those toxins.
Yeah.
So don't have a like a beer every night, and you might find you recover. You might not. You might need that beer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But like these are the things we like. We try these weird and wonderful. Like, have you seen those like boots they put on their legs, that compression things?
Oh, okay.
And they're, yeah. They just look like it just looks silly.
Yeah.
I tell you what though, I have got this. They sent me like this Nuricor TENS device, and that's supposed to help recovery.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to promote it.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure on the site, like if it's working for me or not.
Right.
So I'm a terrible, I mean, hopefully they don't listen to this. If they do, I'm in well.
Yeah.
But I just don't, I haven't been able to promote it massively because I don't know if it actually works.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've tried it out and it does like, it's a really nice little bit of kit.
Yeah.
Because it's got a little travel one. It's like kind of, the, you could fit it in a matchbox.
Isn't TENS to do with like having a baby? My wife,
I thought it was like
that's the TENS machine to take the pain away when she was giving birth. So we might have to borrow,
you know,
that.
The little electric stimulation thing, like the Compex is another one.
Yeah.
Am I thinking the right thing, or have I said something really strange? No. This is what they do. Like, it's like electrical stimulation.
Yeah.
And I put them on my quads, but I've been trying them out, and doing all the different things on it and everything, and then put them on different. They've got different flip flops, and they do your feet and your back.
Yeah.
And your quads. And then I just get bored and start ramping it up until it hurts.
Yeah.
I see how painful this can get. Oh, yeah, that's really painful. And this one's like, I can only get to like 4 out of 20 and then my legs are just twitching out all over the place. Yeah. It's powerful. But I don't know if that works.
Yeah.
I can't. My legs still hurt afterwards, but it's probably not linked to the fact whether I've done this or not.
Yeah.
I'm not uninjured, but what am I expecting? Miracles.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I know a lot of people who swear by them for recovery.
Yeah.
But it could, and then people say, well, you know what they're doing, can you do? They're making you lay down for half hour.
Yeah.
And the actual improvement comes from laying down and not really doing much for half hour.
Yeah.
Rather than these devices.
And the placebo. But yeah.
If you want to buy that one, obviously tell them that I said.
Yeah. Right, there are all these things. You could let us know what your weirdest thing was, what the weirdest product you've ever bought related to that. If you do that, we're going to give away a Let's Get Running t-shirt, provided I have your size in stock. So yeah, if you do that in the review.
What sizes have you got, mate?
I've got a few mediums, a few smalls, some ladies' sizes. Yeah, we're fine. I'm sure we got your size. If we haven't, we'll get an equivalent size of something made up for you. So yeah, do that. Enter, and you will see. But lovely. I'm going to head off. Robbie, I think I've got to go and do my 2-hour run now, which is going to be exciting because I missed a long one over the weekend.
Oh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I shouldn't be rubbing it.
I'll do some recovery instead, mate.
Go and do some active recovery.
We didn't talk about rest days. That's something to bring up this week.
Okay.
Talk about rest days.
Okay. Good or bad? Okay, yeah, we will. Right.
Good.
Brilliant. Love it. Oh, maybe we should talk, we're going to talk rest days and double days and that little conundrum. So we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks' time. Lovely. All right, man. We'll speak soon.
Cheerio, buddy.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.